Hello, my name is Rebecca Rees and welcome to Digital Dissect, the podcast that observes and breaks open the music industry through the lens of digital analysis. Because I'm on a quest to make sense of the changing digital landscape by exploring questions like, how is digital media changing the culture of creative industries? And how do we take advantage of a new type of economic market that is exposing new sources of value and growth? Today, I'm joined by singer-songwriter Kerry Watt to discuss how to deal with online audiences. With Kerry's debut album having just reached number 11 in the Americana charts, she has spent some time relishing in the small things that come with releasing an album during a nationwide lockdown. Pre-COVID, Kerry was smashing the live scene, supporting Keith Urban at the Royal Albert Hall, opening for Coldplay on their Head Full of Dreams tour, and performing at British Summertime Festival on the same day as Celine Dion. Today we'll be talking about the online world, how she's grown her fan base and nurtured her audience via Patreon. Patreon is a subscription service for content creators that processed more than 500 million payments in 2019 alone. On here, Kerry treats her dedicated subscribers to exclusive content each week, including things like cover songs and sign merch and other exclusive videos. Not only does this increase revenue for her, but it helps her to defend against competition and be attractive to brand ambassadors. Although she continues to market through classic strategies with her label, I'm interested in how her direct relationship with fans has allowed her to take control of the conversation and create interesting content that keeps her niche, loyal fan base coming back for more. Kerry, welcome to Digital Dissect. How are you?
I am very good, thank you. It's like a nice snowy day here in Scotland, so I'm good.
It's lovely. It's snowing here too in Cheltenham, and it's a lovely change of scenery.
Absolutely.
So you've just released your debut album, Neptune's Daughter, which is a really lovely mix of country and pop. And how has it been for you going through your album campaign during the pandemic?
It's obviously not what I pictured when I recorded the album, but I think after this past year of so much uncertainty about what's going on with music and live shows and when we'll all come back, it actually feels great to be doing something and to be putting music out there. It worked out well to put it out at the top of the year when I certainly needed, you know, a bit of a boost, and the majority of the album is full of very sort of uplifting, happy, dreamy songs. So that seems to have resonated really well with people that just kind of needed a bit of that escapism, you know, even if it was just in their own head or their own ears. It's been great. I can't fault it, apart from not obviously being able to play some live gigs.
And you decided to become self-managed too.
Yeah. Well, I had done that for, you know, the first few years of my career, and over the past 8 years or so, I've worked with different managers and all have brought amazing things to the table and really, you know, helped me find myself as a musician. But I never felt like the people I was working with was a true representation of who I was, and I'm so involved in the whole process, from the writing to the creative side, the music videos and the business side. And I just thought I could probably just be doing this. I want to be replying to all the emails. I want to be in all the meetings. And while I'm an artist at this level, you know, I'm not touring the world and have a crazy busy schedule. I felt like it was made sense for me.
Yeah, and it's no reflection on them, right? Like, sometimes it's truly so impossible to explain your creative, artistic vision to someone else, especially people that are representing the opportunities you're getting and where you're going. And yeah, to have some self-control over that must be really important.
Absolutely. And I think more and more over the past few years, it is getting easier for artists to be in control because we can release our music. I mean, I have a great independent record label, but if I didn't, I could release my music myself online, like many of my friends do. And I also find that more and more people, and I think this is like a product of the whole social media experience, but people want to talk to the artist. You know, they want to engage with them personally, not through a third party.
What are you finding the benefits are of being on a label, as well as having a lot of control yourself?
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of the stressful admin out of putting together the releases. There's so many different things that go into that that, yes, can be made easier using, you know, an artist-friendly platform, but it's just a massive help when you're trying to be the artist and be the manager to have a label's support. And of course, they can bring in all kinds of opportunities that I couldn't bring in on my own, getting on the Spotify playlist and Apple playlist, rather than just hoping that I'll appear in one. They can actually go out and try to make that happen.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned before, obviously, there's been no live support really in person for the album campaign. And it must be really hard because you are a prominent performer and you have secured some really brilliant live shows in the past. And this is also a really important part of your genre. But you did a release show via Banquet Records. How was that?
It was really cool. I had no idea how many people were coming to that Banquet Records show, and I was overwhelmed at how much support there was, not just from fans and listeners of the music, but so many people involved in the album that I didn't realize were going to be there just appeared, like my producer Machine, some of my co-writers, a guy that works in Glasgow Radio that really gave me a great opportunity a few years ago. And it felt like a real sort of family community feel with my family and friends, my fans, my co-writers, and it was just the perfect thing to bring everyone together. Because if I had done, you know, a live launch show, I wouldn't have actually been able to have those people that I worked with from America be there with, you know, my Scottish family and my label that are in London. So it was cool, and probably one of the few occasions I'll ever get to have everyone in the same place.
And so it charted number 11 on the Americana charts, which is awesome. And I've been really digging into this world of Americana and country recently. And in light of the themes in today's discussion, where we're going to talk about audiences and what you've just said about having like a family launch party, I've noticed really how supportive the Americana and country community is. And I'm wondering how you find it different to the pop commercial world.
What it is in the sort of rootsier genres is it really feels like there's no competition between the acts. You know, it's not like some pop acts that are all demoing the same song that, you know, you hear these stories of like some big writers written a song and Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, Miley Cyrus, they all demo it. These kind of rootsier genres, Americana, country, folk, whatever, everyone's creating and writing their own music, and everyone is a genuine music lover. They're not doing it because they want to be a celebrity or, you know, it's like a fad or something. The Americana genre, particularly in the UK, is still growing. You know, it's still kind of under the radar. It's not mainstream. You don't hear Americana getting played every 5 minutes on the radio. And so it's a real collaborative effort between all the acts to kind of make sure that our genre is heard. And that can only come from kind of supporting each other.
And I think the world of digital has obviously allowed these genres to come out of America a bit more and into the UK. We have a lot more new digital platforms popping up that are supporting the genre. We've seen Spotify creating more like territorial country playlists rather than just having like Nashville country or something. As you say, that the fan bases in the genres are real music lovers and loyal fans, opposed to just liking someone for how they look today or, you know. So you're on Patreon and you have two membership tiers, Earthlings and Astronauts, if I'm right. Can you explain your memberships and how you use Patreon?
Well, I started using Patreon last year around May, June time, when I realized that it probably was really going to be a long time before I was going to get to engage with my fans, you know, directly live on stage at shows and things like that. And we'd pushed the album back and I just really wanted a space where I could like connect with them directly and give them an opportunity to have some unique experiences that wouldn't be offering elsewhere on my Instagram or my Facebook or whatever. So the two tiers basically offer different things. Earthlings get to kind of see the content that I'm sharing on Patreon, and the astronauts actually get to have a say in it. So they get to vote on what cover song they want to see, vote on a live show and what they want. They get free access to a live stream and things like that. And it worked really, really well. Kind of took that up till Christmas time and put out so much content. I think I almost overcommitted with Patreon because I thought, oh, I'm going to have all this time. And then I ended up releasing two unplanned EPs, and then we started going into the album release. So by the end of last year, I was kind of like, I think I've taken Patreon to a point where I'm not going to be able to continue producing this much content over the next 6 months with the album and a podcast that I'm recording and a few other projects I've got going on. I've changed the membership. So rather than patrons getting, you know, 10 things monthly, I'll just put out a piece of content when it's ready. And if they want to pay to see it, they can. So it's less commitment from me, less commitment for them. But in that 6 month period last year, it was really, really exciting. And one of the things that was keeping me going and keeping me being creative, like every month I was going to record a new cover song. So I had to do that. I had to go through their list of suggestions, learn them all, play them all, and then decide which one I was going to actually sit down and produce up. But I think it's an awesome platform. And for creators that do have the time to kind of keep it going consistently, it's really, really valuable.
How are you deciding between what content you are putting exclusively on Patreon and what you are putting on socials? Because obviously on socials, you want to be updating as much as possible and releasing loads of content to keep the momentum up. Yeah, how are you deciding that split?
So on my socials, it was a little bit less. So I might do like 30 seconds of a cover in my Instagram stories, me just playing acoustically. But in Patreon, you would get a full song that I had produced and worked on with other musicians. You know, I would bring my brother in a lot, who's a producer, to help me with things. And they would have a say in obviously what the song was. So it's just kind of stepping up, and then they get to keep that content. I'll send them the download to it, so they're getting, you know, free recordings and things. But still making sure that I'm keeping non-patrons on socials up to date with important things that are going on.
Yeah, because with Patreon, it's a much more direct form of customer relationship management. And how was this changing your relationship with your audience?
It was really interesting, not just through Patreon, but over the whole of the last year, having the time to actually kind of really dive in and get to know who my fans are as people, where they live, what they like, what they engage with, what they want to talk about, if they want to speak to me, engage with me directly, or if they prefer to just kind of sit on the sidelines and enjoy the content. Patreons, you know, if they're going to commit to spending money on a monthly subscription, they really do want that more tailored personal experience. And I loved giving that to them, and I loved getting to know them and kind of getting to know their habits. And you would see when people made like cover suggestions each month, you could even start to tell what kind of music that particular person was into compared to the next person, which was cool for me.
So you've managed to harness Patreon to create this really loyal, engaged fan base in one platform. How do you harness data and feedback from these audiences to influence your future marketing and your content decisions? This might be to bring in more loyal fans, or maybe just to retain the existing ones.
One thing that I was noticing, older male fans, and don't get me wrong, any fan, any supporter means so much to me that they would give their time and support. But I really wanted to try and diversify it a little bit and really try bring in some more women like me, young women that could relate to me and where I felt like I could open up about things that were going on in my life, in my head, in fashion, which I'd kind of steered away from because I thought, oh, these guys that are following me, they're not going to respond to that. So that was where I did like a big deep dive into the data to see who was responding to what. And I found that women were almost being put off a little bit by these really male heavy comments that were often about my appearance or whatever. And so I tried to kind of change the narrative a little, not wanting to turn those people away, but to make my platforms a little bit more inviting to the women that I really would have loved to have there. Doing like, you know, all the stats and the insights on Instagram is super helpful. And I was keeping a really close eye on that. And gradually last year, just through tweaking things based on the data that I saw, managed to actually flip it 60-40. So now my fan base is 60% women who are in my age range, like 25 to 34. I don't think I would have even really been fully aware of how much of a difference there was in, you know, in the people that were following me if I hadn't been able to look at all that data.
Where were you getting this data from? Was it things like Instagram's charts or Facebook insights, places like that?
Yeah, exactly. Both of those places, they're where I'm most active, particularly Instagram. And also just, you know, going through the comments, going through my new followers, seeing who they were, who else they followed. And I never had time to sit and do that before, but last year I had all the time to sit and do that. And then making sure that I was connecting with similar accounts, because I was always more of a poster rather than a user. I would see posts that I liked, but I would never really engage with them. I wouldn't comment on them, even if I thought something nice about them. So I made a conscious effort to engage a little bit more and try have a more sort of friendly presence in amongst the circles that I was interested in being a part of.
Especially when we say there's such a community, it's really important to get involved in these existing conversations, not only like for your own creativity and inspiration, but to actually reach other people. And I was going to ask, when you've tried to move to a different audience or bring in another audience, was this through like content decisions and your user decisions, or was it through paid advertising and you specifically setting up a post and an ad to reach a different type of audience?
So in the beginning, it was through content. And one thing that I found really helped was captions. And what I was saying in my captions, in the past, it had been recommended to me that I try to play it kind of aloof and cool and write very minimal cryptic captions, but that's not really my personality at all. I love to chat and engage with people. So as soon as I started writing these longer captions and, you know, letting people in a bit to my life and talking about things that I hoped other young women would relate to, that's when I saw a shift. And then I did do some paid advertising where I would target these groups that I thought we're going to respond and engage in the best way. So it's kind of been a mix of the two, and both have worked and been effective in their own way.
So you have actually looked at the data now and you've seen that your audience has diversified?
Massively so, yeah.
Oh, that's so great. And what I really love about your content feeds is that it is really organic. It is you yourself, you're showcasing your personality. There isn't like loads and loads of sponsorships going on. It's all very organic and it's you and people are investing in your work. But have you used messaging bots and have your fans been receptive to this form of communication? You know, like automatic messages when people sign up to you. Sometimes that can't seem very authentic and it's not always an organic way of growing an audience, but have you had experience with these?
I haven't used messaging bots. I think, although I do try to think of myself in a way as a product. You know, I'm selling a product. It's my personality and my music. I still never want it to feel like a business that's trying to, you know, sell people on something. And I really want the whole experience for the listeners and the followers to feel very personal. And as much as possible, I will reply to personal messages or emails. And I feel like for me, messaging bots just would, there'd be a disconnect, and I don't think people would respond well to it. Whereas before, I would send out newsletters, like an email newsletter to the people that had signed up to follow me about stuff that was going on all the time. And gradually, not as many people were opening them. And I know exactly how that feels, because I sign up to some artists that I love, but when I'm getting emails from them every week, I'm not opening them, I'm not interested. So I'm trying to like just make it a much more personal experience now. I now only send a newsletter if it's something really big and important, because I know that otherwise the people who are following me will hopefully see it on social media. Or if they really want to know, they will go and figure it out. And going back to the messaging bots is just trying to make it as personal an experience as possible and not make the listeners feel like they're kind of all lumped in together.
We've spoken about Patreon. Socials. You've just mentioned mailers there. Are there any other platforms that you're kind of interested in trying to harness? Maybe YouTube, you said you started setting up a podcast, going more into that audio or visual space, especially during the pandemic and when everyone is online and you need to try and diversify yourself as much as possible. Are there any areas that you're thinking about harnessing or you've tested and it hasn't worked?
Yeah, the podcast thing for me is the most exciting at the moment, because people have now heard so much music from me over the past couple of years. I've had the two EPs, the album, like four or five singles, acoustic versions of all the songs. And I think the most interesting thing I could do now for the people that have listened is give them a bit of insight and background into what went into the making of those songs. If I was a mainstream pop artist, I might not think that was as interesting, but I know just from the way that they engage with me and the questions they ask that the people that follow me are interested in hearing what goes on behind the scenes. And a lot of the people that follow me are musicians themselves. So I think this new podcast that I'm launching, which is basically behind the scenes of the debut album, where I speak to all the creatives involved and the part they played and the gear we used and all that stuff, that's going to be the best and most interesting thing I could offer my existing listeners at this point. So I'm super excited about that. And then obviously trying to reach new fans all the time. There's so many different ways of doing that. And I've thought a little bit about, you know, maybe starting like a weekly covers thing on YouTube or something like that. Maybe. I've downloaded TikTok and deleted it about four times. I just can't get into it, which is strange because I know 10 years ago I would have been all over that platform. I would have just adored it, but find that platform quite difficult to connect with. But we'll see how this podcast goes. And if people find that interesting, you know, I might continue it talking about other creative projects that I'm working on.
TikTok is an interesting one because I think before the pandemic, it was already blowing up in a certain space. It was very humorous. There was a lot of memes, but actually in the pandemic, it's been used for educational purposes. We see like doctors on there, schools trying to like post little educational videos and things like that. And I think it's really interesting the direction it's taking, because you yourself, you're quite a performer. You have some really cool, like energetic music videos. To put small clips like that on TikTok and just see what happens to them could be quite an interesting space. But I agree, it takes a lot of energy. It's a very unpredictable platform. And I suppose you need to be working in the spaces where your audiences are really already engaging with you and just retain them and keep them there.
Yeah, I guess I feel with TikTok that starting on any new platform is a commitment. If you're not ready to commit to making regular content, I'm just not sure that I could, you know, harness it in the best way. And I think particularly about that platform, although I know you could absolutely say this about any of them, But it's just, it's so much. There's so much like information in the accounts that I've tried to follow or unfollow on the other platforms in the past year. I've been a bit more selective about what information I'm seeing, especially in this pandemic, because it's been so overwhelming. There's so much bad and sad and awful things all the time. It's the mental health conversation again, and what you're exposing yourself to. For me now, being more selective about what I'm letting myself look at is important.
And I suppose you have that responsibility to your fans as well, where you're driving them to and what they're consuming. And TikTok is an interesting one because we're talking about audience development and loyal fans here. And although on TikTok you may reach a lot of people, it's very momentarily. Like, you'll be big on there for a day, and then you've got to work to translate those users onto your other platforms where you can actually provide them value. So it's an interesting argument, isn't it? In terms of digital media, how has it improved your connection to international territories that are quite critical for your brand? For example, Nashville, LA as well.
The best thing for me has actually been not so much connecting with fans, but connecting with other musicians in those territories. So I know when I go over there, there's people that I've, you know, interacted with online that maybe I could meet up with. And those things then go on to help me find fans over there. So for example, people that I've met through Instagram that live in Nashville, I go over there and they'll invite me to play a show with them at like the Listening Room or one of those songwritery round venues in Nashville. And then I get to actually go and play live to people that live in that area. So that's really valuable. Also in terms of collaborating and co-writing, which I've done a lot of with people in Nashville and in LA and then in Austin where I recorded the album. I think connecting with people that already have a life and a fan base in those territories is what helps me kind of reach out a bit more. I'm not just going online and targeting people that live, you know, thousands of miles away. There's a kind of more organic route to get to those people.
And if you didn't have all this access and you were living in the UK and you hadn't, I suppose, been exposed to Nashville, do you think the sort of music you would be making would be a lot different?
I'm not sure. I don't know how much Nashville really has influenced my music. Definitely living in California when I was younger did. That kind of, I would say, influenced me as a person and my personality and my likes and dislikes in music and outside of music. Like, I love road tripping, I love nature, and that comes a lot into play with my lyric writing. And that all kind of stems from the laid-back lifestyle of living in California. But I also really feel that here in Scotland. And, you know, Glasgow has a huge rootsy community. There's lots of blues, there's lots of soul in the bars and the open mics and the clubs in Glasgow that I don't think many people know about if you don't live in Glasgow. I'm actually writing a musical about that exact topic at the moment. And I mean, bands like the Temperance Movement, who are from Glasgow, they sound like they're straight out of the South in America. Or even like Paolo Nutini with his cool, funky accent. So part of it came from the US and part of it, I think, actually is a lot of my upbringing here in Scotland.
So actually it's just broadened your process, I suppose, and your thinking and your inspiration. So how has digital media enabled you to control your artistic vision then and your brand, especially in lockdown where you've had a really vital release for you, for your career, and you've still managed to create a lot of content surrounding that?
It is difficult to stay inspired week after week. I found right at the beginning of the pandemic in sort of March, April, May, June, I was just full of ideas and everything that I'd ever thought I wanted to do. I suddenly had time to make and to create these things. And then by the end of the summer, I was burning out a little bit because I'd gone so deep in the social media and was posting multiple times a day, stories all day, and actually stepping back and sort of taking a break, not disappearing, but just chilling it out for a couple of months was the best thing, because then I was like newly energized to promote these two EPs and then the album. But you have to be interested in other things, and that's what will help you be interesting. So I was sharing everything from like film recommendations to clothes that I was wearing, and then I was selling clothes online to raise money for this charity Stop the Traffic that I work with. And you have to be inventive, and it has to be authentic, because you can't post the same thing every day, you know, without saying anything new. So it is, it's constantly trying to come up with new ideas. And I think when you feel those moments of you're kind of burning out, the best thing you can do is step back, because if you start just posting stuff that doesn't have any real intention behind it, people will see right through it and they won't be interested.
But also just having access to like your own mic setup, you've got your own little studio, you've got access to cameras, you can do live streams, and then you've got ways to show all of this, which are these social platforms. I think it's so important to remember how lucky we are to have that in 2020 and 2021 when we can't get out there and meet people physically.
I can't imagine what, you know, this would have been like even 20 years ago. You know, my brother lives in America and my cousins live over there too. My friends live all around the world. I haven't seen a single one of my friends since last February. We're incredibly, incredibly fortunate personally and professionally to be able to keep working and to keep engaging with people.
And so right now you're living in Scotland, but obviously your record label is in London. How has digital media allowed you to connect with big cities and perhaps even lead to this signing, or has your signing actually facilitated this connection more so than digital media? What are your thoughts there?
I lived in London for 7-8 years, so I made a lot of connections living there, and I probably wouldn't be in the same position now if I just stayed in Scotland the whole time. So that helped me right from the beginning sort of open up to this world that is the music industry in London. And from there, that was kind of a springboard to the other territories, because while there's so much great music in Scotland, it is hard to get your music out of Scotland if you don't physically leave and go somewhere else. I'm not saying it's impossible. Absolutely, it can be done. But living in places like London and then, you know, working with people that they had the connections in other territories is what really helped me, I think.
So this has been such an interesting conversation, learning about how your content has changed during lockdown, how you keep up connecting and bringing value to your loyal fan base. And I have one more question, and I just wanted to ask how in your music and in your presence online, do you feel personally that you're pushing culture or music forward, either for yourself or, you know, for the industry? Where are you playing your part there?
I think coming full circle back to the top of the conversation and talking about the kind of collaborative effort of the Americana rootsy circles, you know, as songwriters and artists, we are undermined a lot by streaming services, and it just feels like it's a big hill to climb up and none of us can do it on our own. So I'm constantly trying to promote my fellow artists online, in person. And one thing that I think I kind of try to offer to help, as you say, push the culture forward of Americana music was hosting the Americana show with Kerry Watt, which was a radio show in Glasgow for 2 years. And that meant that every week I would go and research artists, UK artists primarily, figure out who was making new music. People would send me music sometimes, then I would play it on the show and I would talk about these new artists and just kind of try hype up the genre and hype up the culture a bit. And I think everybody who is a part of this kind of musical bubble has a part to play in doing that, in not only promoting themselves, but each other and kind of the friendly culture of it all. Because if you go to any country show, like if you go to C2C at the O2, it's just the friendliest place. Like everyone's wandering around, they're so happy, and they're so into music and they want to make friends.
It's so important to bring people on your journey and on your success. There's so many incredible musicians everywhere. No one is that one single best musician. And it's so important to share your contacts with them, share your experience, share your expertise, what's working for you, where your audiences are. And I think a big part of marketing is never knowing what other people's audiences are. And there is such a competitive element. And that does have to be there. But it is really important to share your success and bring people through with you. And also so that you continue to enjoy your work. You know, this is something that you love doing, but it's also something you have to do 9 to 5 every single day.
Yeah, I think especially being a solo artist, it is so lonely at times. It's one thing being at home and feeling lonely, but when you go out on the road and you don't have a band and you don't have a manager and you don't have a team, it can be incredibly lonely. So I've done, you know, joint tours with friends where we both were double headliners and we'll take turns each night and we'll travel together. And you have to enjoy it, because that comes through in the music and the performance, and then that's what people connect to. And I guess like the most important thing is making something that's, for me anyway, that's going to bring other people joy. That's kind of the goal with my music.
It's just about creating this safe space for people to enjoy music and share creativity and share inspiration. And I think, bringing it back to the theme of this podcast, digital media has really facilitated that and allowed that to happen, you know, globally, on a global scale as well. So yeah, there's a lot of disruption, but there's also a lot of positives to take out of it. But thank you so much for being on. It's been really great to talk to you.
That's all right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Kerry for being on Digital Dicet to share her journey as a musician, who continues to grow her brand organically by providing value through community management and personable content feeds, acquiring and retaining users that really invest in what she loves doing. It was interesting to discover how this has changed through the analysis of audience data and setting new objectives for diversifying her fan base. The main takeaways are certainly that remaining authentic, organic, and aware of audience desires will create the energy needed to foster a fan community of music lovers that create a really safe space for sharing and keep inspiration and creativity fluid. If you found that conversation interesting, then please subscribe to Digital Dicet on the podcast app of your choice for free to be notified when the next episode drops. Please get involved at rebeccareese.org/digitaldicet with your thoughts and opinions, and follow digital.dicet on Instagram to join in the journey as we figure out the complexities of the music industry. Please go and give a review, as it helps others find the podcast much easier. Thank you again to Kerry and all of the team in the show notes.